Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 257, recorded July 6th, 2015.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, guys.
We're reporting from a distinctly cooler building than we were last time.
Yes, we have a new swamp cooler in. Hooray! No,
they actually got it in more quickly than they...
Well, they did.
Well, they
we
did.
Called
another
somebody
company
else
did.
Who was...
We're able to work it out with another company, so...
And they charged us less, and it was a better cooler, yeah. So it was
an all-around better deal, and probably worth a couple of days of sweltering heat.
Yep.
All right, well, that's enough of that. On to our contributors.
We've got Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Rachel in Baltimore, Maryland. Have we heard from Rachel before?
New contributor, welcome.
Yay. And Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
So let's start with Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan, shall we?
Yep. And he says, hello, Aquarimax. I couldn't resist a chance to chime in on the turtle talk, which seems to have been going on, since I am primarily a herpetoculturist versus an aquaculturist. I would have said, how do you... Is that how you say that?
Aquaculturist is a perfectly valid term. Yeah.
Okay.
You can say aquarist too, but, you know.
Well, really, I'm more of an arachnoculturist or maybe a bladiculturist, but I'm rambling. Okay, I know what arachnoculturist would be. Mm-hmm. What would be a bladiculturist?
You don't want to know.
Is it roaches?
Yes.
Ew. Sorry, but Jeremiah.
That's okay. If you keep spiders, you know, it only makes sense you'd keep roaches for the spiders to eat.
You can feed them crickets.
I know, but roaches are so much easier.
But roaches are gross and disgusting, and they shall remain gross and disgusting forever.
Okay, well, let's continue on.
Okay. In the U.S., the restriction on the sale of aquatic turtles below 4 inches has nothing whatsoever to do on animal welfare issues or environmental issues. Back in the 70s, there was a salmonella outbreak, which was alleged to be related to aquatic turtles. Turtles, along with any reptile and many, many other organisms, can carry salmonella, and I've been led to understand from other reptile keepers that back in the 70s, there was a huge issue with turtles being kept unfiltered. I'd actually argue this is still an issue. In any case, if you don't want to get sick from your pet turtle, use a good filter and do regular water changes. They poo in there.
Very good point.
Well, this was, yeah, that was kind of the problem back then, is everybody was, they weren't raising the turtles in a responsible manner. It was more just turtle farming, and they were in horrible disgust. It's the same reason they tell you not to eat raw eggs now from the grocery store, because they keep the chickens, not because chickens are bad or eggs are bad, but because they keep these poor chickens in disgusting, deplorable conditions, so of course they're going to have diseases.
Yeah, I've even heard, and I can't confirm or deny it, but I've heard that some of these young turtles back in the day were raised in sewage treatment ponds.
Yeah, so of course they're going
to
be sick.
Yeah, yeah. Jeremiah's right on the money.
If you raise people like that, the people are going to be sick too.
Yeah, yeah. So it is.
So it's evil people doing it.
Yeah, salmonella is, of course, a serious issue. But like he says, any reptile and lots of other animals can carry it. It's a sanitation issue. Yeah, makes sense.
Yep. And then he goes on to say, a negative side effect of this ruling is that it has made it illegal under FDA regulations to sell many species of aquatic turtles, such as spotted turtles, musk turtles, as they never exceed 4 inches in carapace diameter and can supposedly live out their life in a 20-gallon tank. So, hilariously, the problem of turtles getting too big results from regulations.
That's what you call ironic.
Yep.
Yeah, that's sad.
What they ought to do is make it illegal to keep the turtles in those conditions rather than say you can't have turtles.
Yeah. And I've often been intrigued by the idea.
But the FDA has never been known for its intelligence.
Well, I've been, thought it would be nice to keep some of those smaller turtles, like Jeremiah was saying, sometime. But you can't find them in the stores because of that very reason. Yeah.
It's very sad. He says, an update on my tank. The pothos and ficus have died completely. I have given up on the duckweed doing much, so I'm taking it out gradually. The tank has some algae, but I continue my weekly water changes and will continue to monitor. We have to move next year, so adding more plants seems like a waste. I will likely decrease the amount of light the tank gets.
Right.
So I don't know if it makes it a little easier to set it back up, you know, and not have it...
If what?
Having all the plants, because they've still got all the nutrients in them, if you're going to put the, you know, if you have to redo the... Of course, I guess it depends on how far you are going to move. How far are you moving?
Yeah, that does make a difference. If he's going to have to dismantle the tank completely, it doesn't really make much sense.
Yes, that's true.
We didn't have to move very far, so we were okay. We just left all the plants in the tanks, left the lids on them with a small amount of water at the bottom. That was enough. It was like a terrarium.
Because it's like a 45-minute trip.
Yeah, but from where we were. If you're going to move to a different state, or you're going to move 10 hours away or something, it might not work that way. So, yeah.
That's true.
It's a good point. Well, it's always a balance. But decreasing the light, you know, you got to decrease something. That makes sense. Increasing the light could be a way to do it. Thank you, Jeremiah, for the update.
Okay, we're going to go to Rachel in Baltimore, Maryland. And she says, "Hi, my name is Rachel. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I recently got into goldfish after having freshwater fish for about a decade. I have two pearl scales in a 29-gallon, and it is planted with live Amazon swords that have so far been untouched. I'm curious what you think is a better substrate for goldfish, sand or gravel? I've heard debates about both sides. I hate the upkeep of sand and currently have small gravel, which I think my swords prefer, but I've heard goldfish tend to swallow them. What do you recommend? Thanks so much. I'm a new listener and love you guys already."
Well, thank you for contributing, Rachel. We'd like to welcome you to Aquariumat.
Oh, she has another little PS.
Oh yes. We can get to that after, though. Oh. I just wanted to talk about this. Because it's kind of, you know, it is a PS, so it kind of works that way. Sand or gravel? I'll tell you what. I tend to be a gravel person, on the gravel side of things myself, rather than sand. It does depend on what I'm doing. I have had tanks with sand in them. I do, in fact, have tanks with sand in them. But as far as goldfish go, I would say I tend to go on the gravel side for a couple of reasons, even though I know that there are some disadvantages to gravel and some advantages to sand. The main reasons I think I prefer gravel are, one, sand is really messy with goldfish picking it up and spitting it out all the time.
So does it make the water cloudy?
It can. You have to... Yeah, it can. It's kind of like coolie loaches kick up a lot of debris when they're messing around in the sand. Mm-hmm. And I had a tank with black sand on the bottom and 10 or 12 or, you know, a number of coolie loaches in there. And the water was never clear because they were always kicking things up. It didn't matter how many water changes I did or anything. They just were always kicking up a little bit of a mess.
Up dust.
It was never, you know, opaque water in it either. It was just like there was a slight haze to it all the time, which I didn't really like.
Mm-hmm.
Goldfish will pick up the sand and spit it out, but they will also pick up and spit it out in areas where it will tend to go up the filter tubes and
Does
knock
it clog
around
it?
Inside the impeller chamber and rip the impeller up into little pieces.
That's no good.
Yeah, eventually it damages the impeller. It doesn't take that long to damage the impeller. And then you have, you know, a filter that doesn't work anymore. That can happen with sand. So one, it can be an issue with water clarity. Two, it can be an issue with filter integrity. Those are the main ones that come to my mind why I tend not to use sand with goldfish. I have heard that goldfish tend to swallow gravel as well. I think it's important to be careful with the size of the gravel. I think you can, if you're really careful, depending on the size of your goldfish, you can sometimes get... you know, gravel particles that they're not likely to be able to pick up, larger bore gravel, but that can be tricky. Or you can just get gravel that's small enough that if they happen to swallow one, it's not going to get stuck somewhere.
What do we have?
And they can get past through. We've got, I actually handpicked every one of those pieces of gravel, and I know that sounds insane, but I did that because of a particular filter I was using a long time ago. You remember the, what was it called?
What house was it in?
It was in the Willow House. I can't remember what it was called now. Easy Clean Filter, Everclean Aqua.
Oh, the one that we like reviewed
we did
on
a review
the podcast.
On it, yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
We did an Everclean Aqua review, and we were trying it, and we needed a certain size of gravel to be able to put it on top so that it couldn't fall through the holes on the plate that went on the bottom.
Yeah.
So I had to pick all the gravel by hand, because it was in a container of gravel, and I can't remember if it was 2/3 of them were the right size, 1/3 wasn't, or something.
Did you just put them on top of the thing outside of water and shake it till the other ones fell out?
I don't remember exactly what I did, except that it was very
painstaking. Or did you hold them all up to a ruler?
I think I just eyeballed them and said, that one's big enough. You know, I looked at the holes, and I said, this one's big enough, and put it over here. This one's not big enough, put it over there. It was frustrating, to say the least.
I must have blocked it out.
But it's not that bad because it's a fairly small footprint to that tank. It's a 37 high, and the gravel level is not deep at all. It's like one or two pieces of gravel deep. So it wasn't super bad. It wasn't as bad as it sounds at first.
Still a lot of gravel.
But it is. That way the goldfish can't really pick them up. They can dig around in them, which they like doing, and it's good for them to be able to dig around in it, but they can't really pick them up. So it works okay. And it's not deep enough that there are all these gaps that are collecting debris and causing things to rot. You know, I get down there with a gravel washer and dig stuff out, and it works really well, and the water stays clear.
And yeah, that tank, it looks nice.
So that's my take on it. But small gravel works really well for goldfish too, because if they do happen to swallow some, it doesn't really cause a problem. It passes through their digestive system. They're okay. So
there you go.
Those are my thoughts on that. And I do recognize that it is possible for goldfish to swallow mid-sized gravel and get it stuck and cause problems. We had one goldfish some years ago. I'm not certain how he died, but I suspect it may have been because of that.
Which one?
Calico Jack.
Oh.
Sudden death. And very sudden death, and he was stuck there with his mouth open. And I looked in and tried to see if there was any gravel. I didn't see anything, but you never know. Okay, now we can go to the PS.
Oh, okay. She says, I forgot to mention that one of my pearl scales has one eye. His name is Blinky. He was housed with a knife fish at the local fish store for some reason, and he made a snack out of his right eye. He is still a happy, healthy guy regardless, but she sent some pictures of him. He's kind of cute.
Yeah.
So we can put those up.
Kind of like pearl scales. There's something funny about
them. Pearly.
Kind of looks like they swallowed a golf ball, but in a cute sort of way. That's what I like about them. And well, it's nice to meet Blinky. And we are sad that he lost his eye, but glad that he found a good home. And like you say, goldfish can actually live happy, healthy, long lives without any eyes. It's happened. In fact, recently there was a goldfish. I posted this on the Aquariumx webpage about a goldfish that was not, he didn't lose an eye, but he was in pretty much total darkness for years. And this, you can check it out on the Facebook page if you want, but, or you can do a Google search. If you do goldfish Shima Aquarium, it'll probably come up. But in Japan, there was this tank of large predatory fish that
they would put feeder goldfish in.
As happens in many aquaria. And they put these goldfish, and one of the goldfish made his way into the overflow and down into it was like a rain gutter style sump. So not a big deep tank type sump, but essentially the same dimensions as a length of rain gutter. And made his way into there. Particles of food would also periodically make their way into there. And this goldfish lived in there for years and years. And it was completely dark down there.
It's kind of a sad way to live.
And eventually somebody was doing maintenance down there, shown a light into the little rain gutter shaped sump and saw something moving around, and they pulled it out, and it was a goldfish, and it was a fairly large goldfish that had started out as a tiny goldfish or a small goldfish anyway, and it had been in there for years and years. And they pulled it out, and some interesting things had happened. The goldfish had gotten quite large. It obviously didn't really lack for food, but it was basically free of normal goldfish pigments, because there hadn't been any light to stimulate the development of the pigments. You know, if you put a goldfish out in a pond, it gets really richly colored. I guess if you keep it in the dark, the opposite happens, and it didn't really develop any pigment. So it's not really a gold goldfish. It's just kind of a pale off whitish goldfish.
Interesting. Will he develop pigment at this stage, or is it too late?
Well, he's been in an illuminated tank in the aquarium now. He has a place of honor there.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a popular attraction. And he hasn't really developed pigment to speak of.
Interesting.
So, interesting, yes, indeed. But I'm glad that Blinky has a much better life than that goldfish did.
Indeed.
In the sump. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us, Rachel.
It's time for that station break thingy
when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99.
Okay. Shall we go to Australia?
Mm-hmm.
Matt in Perth, Western Australia. Says, hello, Aquarimax. The 54-liter marine aquarium is just sitting on my chest of drawers. It does not have a sump. It also does not lend itself to hang on the back refugiums either, as I can see the front and the back of the aquarium. If I got a hang-on-the-back refugium, it'd block the view. Right. I could, however, get a small standalone refugium and pump water to and from it. That would have the advantage of hiding the heater and protein skimmer, too. The Cube Nano Refugium would be great for this. I've put a link to it at the bottom of the email about this product. I'm still in the research stage, though. I do not even know if I can get the Cube sent to Australia. I could even get an even smaller Nano Aquarium kit to use as the Refugium. This would have the advantage of pre-installed lighting, which I would need to allow the macroalgae to grow. But I'd also need to cover it up to prevent the light from keeping me up at night. Refugium lighting is supposed to be left on 24 hours a day, thus giving the macroalgae maximum opportunity to grow and eat up the nitrates.
You know, and I've also heard of systems where they just alternate it so the main system is illuminated during the day and the refugium is illuminated at night. But I can see what you're saying. It is
still going to be on at night.
It's still going to be on at night, and the maximum opportunity to deal with the wastes would be, you know, the 24 hours, like you said.
Mm-hmm. He says, I have been considering refugiums for the 680-liter aquarium's marine conversion as well. This brought up a paradox in my head. So let's say I put a few tangs in the 6-foot aquarium. Tangs eat macroalgae. Can I then feed the macroalgae generated by the refugium to the tangs, or does this defeat the purpose of removing those nutrients from the system?
That is a good question. And my understanding would be that if you were to feed them all of the algae, I don't know that you'd have to have a lot of tangs to do that, but if you were to feed them all of the algae, you would essentially be defeating the purpose to a large extent. Some of it, the nutrients that would otherwise be available to algae would be locked up in living biomass, I guess, but it could be a problem. However, if you're just going to export a lot of that algae just by removing it, you know, and disposing of it appropriately, and giving a little bit to your tangs, and I don't think there's any problem with that, because you are still exporting a lot of nutrients from the system that way, even if not all of them are being exported, because you're recycling them back into the system. Now, it does depend on the kind of algae you're growing too. Tangs differ widely, to my understanding, in their interest in different types of algae, and that varies even from individual to individual. There's a thread on that at Reef Central, and I'll put that up on the page so you can check it out if you like. And I've had a couple of different types of macroalgae that I've grown. The ones that I have the most experience with are grape caulerpa, and the other
grape
one...
Grape or grape?
Grape.
As like in the fruit.
Yes. Because the fronds have little grape-like shapes on them. And the... other one that I've done is Chetomorpha, depending on how you pronounce it. Lots of people pronounce it different ways. And my understanding is that some of the tangs will eat the Chetomorpha, but they can't digest it very well, so it passes right through their systems. Some of them don't eat it at all, and some of them will gulp it down. So you never know. Chetomorpha is kind of nice in that it's not as likely to become invasive as some of the other types, like the caulerpas, can be really weedy. I had problems with the grape caulerpa after a while and had to just try to get it rid of it. I eventually got rid of it, but just by pulling out, yanking every tiny bit out of it, and then every time I'd see another tiny bit surface, I'd yank that out too, and eventually I got rid of it because it's really invasive. The caulerpa less so. It tends to grow in... It's kind of like those plastic pot scrubbers. They just kind of grow in a lump together and like sort of like spaghetti noodles or something, but they all kind of curl around each other, and you can take the whole bunch out at once almost. It's easier not to miss bits. So anyway, there you go.
Okay. Well, he's got another topic in his email too.
Mm-hmm.
He says, my friend Christy is thinking about starting her own marine aquarium. She has no aquariums at the moment. Now she was considering making an octopus tank. How amazing would that be? I'd love to have an octopus. I think that would be super cool. Myself. We actually have a son who really wants to get cuttlefish, which are sort of related.
Right, they are related.
Cuttlefish, squid, octopus. He loves it all.
He loves cephalopods.
He loves cephalopods, yes. Matt says, there is a big drawback with octopuses. And then in parentheses, he says, this is the correct plural, by the way. Octopi is not. Can we have a little linguistic tangent?
Sure.
Okay, explain to us the Latin and Greek issues and why the plural is what it is.
Okay. The incorrect plural octopi comes from the fact that the word octopus ends in a U.S. And people misinterpreted the U.S. ending as a singular masculine ending for Latin, which is pluralized with an I. But in fact, the U.S. was part of a root, not a suffix, and the root was the P-U-S, meaning foot.
From Greek, right?
From Greek, I believe, yes. And because of that, it's not pluralized with an I. And so, did that make sense, the way I said that?
Yes.
Okay. So
can you also get away with just saying octopus like you do with a deer or...
Some people do, yeah. And some people say octopods or octopeds.
Octopods.
And...
That sounds kind of sci-fi and steampunky, octopods. Like they're going to have little steam-powered transport pods that you get in and they've got eight little somethings that crawl around the ground.
See, there you go.
Yes. Okay.
But I, so I appreciate you mentioning that because it is indeed the term octopi is... Mm-hmm. A lot more popular than it should be because it's a misinterpretation of a suffix, of a root that is misinterpreted as a suffix.
Anyways, he says, the big drawback with them is that most do not live more than a year. They also like escaping and destroying their aquariums, aquascaping. The big plus is octopus are intelligent. Just like a border collie, they benefit from mental problems. Not mental problems, like your octopus has a mental problem.
Like
but
a puzzle that presented to them. Yes.
Yes. A classic example is putting the food in a sealed bottle. The octopus will actually start to unscrew the cap to get at the food. They prefer dim lighting and need strong filtration as they are constantly shedding skin. So no expensive lighting is another plus. T5s or basic white LED would do just fine. I've been planning Christie's aquarium for her because, let's face it, I have a problem. I obsessively research aquarium-related topics online, so I can't not plan it for her. I don't know, Matt, if they have any, you know, aquarium-maholics...
12-step programs.
But if they did, we wouldn't recommend it to you.
Because it's a healthy habit.
Yes. We're thinking a 600 by 600 millimeter or 2 by 2 foot, 216 liter or 57 gallon cube... with a single octopus and live rock. I shall take some photos when this eventually goes forward.
That's cool.
That's really cool.
I gotta mention, I saw a video not too long ago of an aquarium where they had trained, using positive reinforcement, an octopus to take pictures of people.
That's pretty cool.
They had a camera that was rigged up underwater, a waterproof camera, of course. It was rigged up with some extra accoutrements so that they could... close off the access of the camera to the octopus, but when somebody paid for it, then they would open up access to the camera and the octopus would reach in down this little tube with his tentacle and push the shutter release and take a picture of the people, and then they could take a picture home or get it emailed to them or something of a picture an octopus actually took out of them.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, so they're pretty intelligent.
Octopus are pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's true. All the things he said about them being, you know, they don't live long. They love to escape. There are all kinds of interesting
problems. What was the story about that octopus and the crab?
Yeah.
In the laboratory. Oh, that was a
fun one.
Tell us the story.
I hope I've got the facts straight, and I may not. But essentially, as I remember it, the story was that a lobster or a crab, some sort of crustacean, was in a tank with an octopus. And the octopus and the crustacean got into a battle and were, you know, fighting. The aquarium staff separated them, moved the crustacean across the room, and then, and this may just be purely anecdotal, I can't make any claims as to its reliability, but at any rate, they had moved the crustacean across the room, and then sometime later at night, they found a wet trail across the floor and a crustacean that had been ripped in half.
And the octopus was back in its tank.
Its own tank.
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. Interesting story.
That is very interesting. Object permanence.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, I was doing a water change on the Discus Aquarium a few days ago, and I pointed the power head at the... How are you supposed to say it?
I don't know. I always want to say it Cice.
If it were Italian, it would be Cice, but yeah. I don't know. S-I-C-C-E. Sissy doesn't sound very good.
I don't know.
Neither does Sicky. So, I'm just going to say Cice.
There you go.
A Cice, CO2 unit. The result was a billow of black carbon in the water. Ooh. About 30 minutes after the water change. This was infuriating, as I had just done a water change, and now my tank was all murky again. I have done a second water change, and all is well again. I am a little suspicious of my Cice CO2 unit now, though, and that does not seem normal behavior to leak carbon into the water from water current. My plants appear to have stopped growing. The bright red plants are covered in green algae, thus making it hard for them to photosynthesize.
Ouch.
I wonder if I should get a gas cylinder CO2 unit. I also suspect that there is a lack of nutrients in the water to allow for plant growth. I may need more fertilizer. I think I need a better canister filter for the Discus Aquarium as well. Do you have a suggestion for the best canister filter for a 200-liter or 53-gallon aquarium?
Well, in terms of the CO2 gas cylinder CO2 unit, I imagine you'll get more CO2 from it. And that may well help. If the fertilizer is a limiting factor, you will need to beef that up, though. And it is possible, if you have a fair amount of plants in your tank, that... You know, they're using up all the nutrients that they can in the balances that there are. So there might be excesses of one or two types of nutrients where they're, because they've maxed out, you know, the other ones. So that could be something to look into. Might look into some different fertilizer dosing regimens and see if that helps. And, you know, in company with that, the gas cylinder CO2. In terms of a canister filter, I don't really have a suggestion for that one. But any of you aquarium mixers out there who has a canister filter and would like to chime in with that, you're welcome to do so. That would be good. I don't, can't really comment on it because I haven't done a lot with canister filters.
To end, Matt says, both my marine and a planted aquarium are certainly proving challenging. I still have a lot to learn in aquatic science. I wonder if there are online courses I can do by professional aquarists to improve my skills. How have you guys educated yourselves in the past?
Well, that's a great question, and I think we should open that up to everybody. Of course, reading books is one good way that I've used. That was probably my primary way at first. And then there's always the internet, although you have to be careful with that. There are courses that you can do. One of them, there's a guy, I believe the title is Dustin's Fish Tanks, and Fish Tank TV. And he teaches courses in planted aquarium keeping. And you pay for the course, and he will, depending on, you know, you can pay for various courses or various types of course and various types of support that he'll provide. And it seems like an intriguing idea. They're like gold memberships or silver memberships or levels or whatever they are. And in certain ones, he'll give you X number of personal consultation hours as well as, you know, instruction. But he'll say, okay, what do you want? What do you have? Where do you want to go with this? And so on. You can pay for different levels of instruction. So that's kind of a cool system, really.
Yeah.
I like that. What else have we done?
You've just done a lot of stuff. I feel like a lot of your education is kind of just your own experiences at home, and you
Yeah, some of it does definitely come from experimentation and talking shop with other people who do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking with we went to visit the aquaponics facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the first time we've done, you know, visited aquaculture facilities either. When we lived in Hawaii, we had a friend who was a marine biologist, and we'd take opportunities to go talk to him and to visit his facilities and things like that. So
I feel like too, you have a lot of background knowledge in various subjects that can relate to, I mean, biology in general, but, you know, also chemistry, and I don't know, you just know a lot of stuff. We have this joke at home. The kids will ask me, you know, a kid question. Why does blah, 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 blah? You know, why is something this way? Why is that way? And I will say, I don't know. Wait until Babo gets home from work and you can ask him. And we all say, because Babo knows everything.
Well, I never say that.
No, I know. Well, we say it. But I feel like you, other than just studying specifically aquarium-related things, I think it's been helpful for you that you've studied chemistry and you've studied, you know, biology and physical sciences and these kinds of things that, so you understand the processes that are going on. So when there's a problem, you can say, okay, this is how the process is supposed to work. So it could be needing to be troubleshooted here, 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 or here, because you understand how it's supposed to work on a, you know, chemical level. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
And whereas I don't, because every time you say KH, I fall asleep.
You're funny.
That's why you like me.
Well, that contributes. It's hardly the only reason.
Oh, come on.
But anyway.
So I don't know. I just, obviously studying specifically aquarium topics is really important, but it, you know, kind of with anything in life, anything that you can study that overlaps and it has a good, you know, gives you good information about whatever systems you're working with. I would imagine, too, it would be helpful even if somebody just had a mechanical background for filter maintenance and that kind of thing.
That's
you
true,
know?
Yeah.
I never knew what an impeller was before I met you. You know.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that there would be specific aquarium-related courses, but I don't know, also if you just wanted to just study overlapping topics.
Well, that's kind of what Matt's doing, I think,
yeah.
Which is good. He's he's developing in lots of different directions. You know, experimentation is one that he's doing. That's a big thing. And just fact-finding. He's doing his research, too, which is also very important. What do you do, Aquarium Maxers? What other things do you do to increase your
Matt's got carpentry
knowledge?
Skills, too.
He does, yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. So
those are helpful.
That definitely helps, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to open that out to everybody. Oh, we're going to put Matt's link up, too, on the webpage to see about the refugium.
Yeah.
I do kind of like the idea that he had about pumping it in and out of the tank so that it's not attached to it, because I can see aesthetically how that would be a problem. But
then you can hide it in something.
Yeah. Or, well, yeah, you could hide it. That would be a good way to do it. Well, let's see. Do we have any updates?
Tiki's getting big.
Yeah, our gecko's
getting
really big.
She's not a fish,
really,
but she's getting big.
She's getting really big. Bubbing,
eating lots
of
bugs.
Crickets and bean beetles and things.
Yeah.
The Opaiula, every single tank has produced at least one batch of young, and several of the tanks have produced more than one batch of young. So there are baby Opaiula in all of our tanks now, all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Opaiula going everywhere. Probably the most productive spring/summer that I've ever had of Opaiula, actually, or at least close to it, in terms of numbers of broods, I think so, because I've never had four tanks before. Let's see.
Anything else?
Oh, I wanted to see what people thought about the unboxing video that I did.
Oh, did you post it already?
I did.
Oh, you did. That's right.
Yeah, it was about isopods, and that does connect to fish because isopods can be used as food for some fish. But it also connects to, you know, vivariums and so on, because they are terrestrial crustaceans. Anyway, I haven't really done a whole lot with unboxing videos, but there was one, and even though it wasn't particularly fishy, it did involve crustaceans. So anyway, I really like zebra pill bugs.
They're pretty.
I think they're cool.
Pretty stripey.
Yeah. And anyway, so if you had any thoughts on the unboxing video or anything like that, you're welcome to chime in on that. But remember, chime in on how you educate yourselves. Chime in on canister filters. Chime in on what you think about sand and or gravel in goldfish tanks. And yeah, there you go. I think that's all for this week. So,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.